So I'd ask you about the conference at Notre Dame. Do you remember some of the people who were there who you were particularly impressed with, or just people you talked with?
Well, I assume that Bartlett and Swain had known Einstein, and probably, well, Herb Brown, probably, and Skell, and I think Fred Rust were there. Now, who else?
Would Kharosh have been there?
He might have, but I'm not sure. He didn't go to very many meetings. I think the odds may be a little better than 50% that he was there, but I don't remember.
No.
Now, probably Nudenberg was there.
Yes, did he take over after you left the Kharosh group?
I was at Chicago as instructor for 6 years, and toward the end of the period, I was spending less time on his students and more on my own work and teaching.
So he probably wasn't all that unhappy about, well, not necessarily about your leaving, but you were no longer working for him.
I think that Bill Reynolds, let me see now. I think that Bill Reynolds followed me immediately, and then Bill Urey after that. And then I think it was Nudenberg. I think I have the order right. And Nudenberg, of course, stayed for many years.
Yes, he left. He was still there when I got there in the 1953-54 period. You were obviously a member of the new wave, or a part of the new wave in organic chemistry, but you were always involved in that aspect of organic chemistry. Did you realize that a transition was taking place, that there was some kind of transition between classical and modern organic chemistry, that, or you were just so much into that new physical organic chemistry that...
Well, when I went back to Chicago from DuPont, Kharosh was starting up several projects related to free radical chemistry, additions to double bonds, peroxide decompositions, halogenations of aliphatic and aromatic compounds, and I was in there watching all those things grow. And in retrospect, this was interesting and important, and other things didn't count very much. This was the world to me, and we were out in front, and the other people who were working in physical organic chemistry weren't working in just the same field. For instance, solvolysis was still a hot subject.
Right, right.
And this sort of thing. But it was clear that free radical mechanisms were going to grow for quite a while. And I guess I didn't look too far ahead.
See, had much work been done on free radical polymerizations at that point in the mid-30s? I don't know.
It wasn't recognized very well as free radical polymerization. The polymerization mechanism work was, at least with unsaturated compounds, was dominated by the German physical chemists, mm-hmm. who apparently didn't know or care much about free radical chemistry, and they would put down the kinetics, but they had no free radical interpretations in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at some of these papers on chain transfer, and I could tell that they didn't have an answer. In 1936, Fleury came out with a paper on free radical polymerization where he introduced the concepts of chain transfer with the monomer, not with the solvent, but with the monomer. And I saw that when I got to U.S. Rubber, this was immediately applicable to the solvent work. And cooked up the equations and they worked.
Mm-hmm.
So there were lots of kinetic studies, but nothing much to relate to mechanism except Fleury until about 1940 when it was just starting.
Mm-hmm.
Just before I left Chicago, I was giving a course on free radical chain reactions. And, of course, this set me up for the work on polymerization.
Mm-hmm. There was no polymerization work going on in the Karash group at that
no.
time?
Mm-hmm. No. Hawkins may have been dabbling some in emulsion polymerization, but I think it was mostly through his consulting operations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You went to GE in about 1950.
Yes, about May, I think.
Okay. What was the nature of the group there that made you feel you wanted to go? And can you say a few words about the work that you did
there? First, I was sure that things weren't going very well at U.S. Rubber either then or in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
And they made me a very good offer, and they brought me in alone without any group and said the custom in the laboratory was for every PhD to do his own research.
This was at GE?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
However, they put in another PhD that they had to collaborate, although he was not my subordinate.
Mm-hmm.
And in a few months, they brought in another man in the same category to work in my laboratory, but not as a subordinate. That was Glenn Russell.
Mm-hmm.
And he had written to GE to ask if he could get a position there because his home had been in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave him the job and put him in there.
He was just leaving Purdue at that time?
Yes.
Or, no. Mm-hmm.
I eventually got a BS assistant to help.
Mm-hmm.
And we all started off on various aspects of the oxidation of olefins,
mm-hmm.
mostly polymerizable olefins. I thought that study of copolymers of co-oxidation might be as rewarding in opening up the oxidation field as copolymerization was in the polymer field. And so we decided we would do the co-oxidation of styrene and methacrylate. And I think Al Miller started this. And he said, should we look at the effect of pressure on this co-oxidation? And I said, well, I don't think there's going to be any there, but we had better check the styrene.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, and it opened up the whole field of making carbonyl compounds and epoxides and polyethers and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed with that for several years. Glenn Russell took variation by looking into oxidations of indene, which was remarkably reactive in copolymerization with oxygen. And he, on his own, stirred up work on the oxidation of 2-nitropropane, which apparently is an ion radical chain. I guess he's still working on some aspects of ion radicals in oxidation. After a while, I told the management that I was spending more than half of my time doing routine oxidations that a good BS could do for me, that I didn't think I was being used very efficiently, and I would like another assistant. And they said no. And so I decided that they weren't getting my money's worth, and I wasn't being as productive as I should have been. And so when SRI put out an offer to me,
had SRI been in business for a long time?
It had been
that,
in, or? Let's see, this was 56. They had were founded about 1947 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
But they had taken on Dr. Robert M. Burns, who had been the chemical director at the Bell Laboratories, as an advisor to the administration here.
Mm-hmm.
And he went out headhunting and got me apparently through Bartlett. And I decided that was partly that I wanted to try the West sometime, and partly that I decided that I wouldn't be any worse off here in terms of assistance than I was at GE,
mm-hmm.
and I would have a try at it. And I did. I had a period at GE at the request of the management when I worked on silicones. This was while I was trying to figure out what to do with the oxidation work. It wasn't finished, but it was going to take a good deal of effort. I think I had a good start on silicones, got 2 short papers out of it. I think they're significant, although I don't know whether anybody else does. But there it rested, the silicones. However, the exposure to the silicones was interesting, useful.
And here at SRI, you've done more oxidation work and...
Yes, they came on and told me I could do anything I wanted to here. And so I decided that I would finish up the oxidation work that I had started at GE, and it took about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the result was about 50 pages in JCS,
mm-hmm.
more or less, which I think contributed considerably to our understanding of the oxidation of unsaturated compounds. Thereafter, I decided that I ought to continue this work on oxidation of unsaturated compounds, extending it beyond the polymerizable monomers, which would copolymerize, to the ordinary olefins. And I got, with the assistance of the then department head here, $50,000 a year from the Air Force for 3 years to look at the oxidation of unsaturated hydrocarbons in general.
Mm-hmm.
This work showed that formation of polyperoxides only, or formation of allylic hydroperoxides only, rather unusual situation. Usually you get a combination of both in various proportions.
Mm-hmm.
This work with the Air Force money also inspired me to look for industrial support on the basis that I've forgotten whether we started out at $5,000 or $7,000 a year, on the basis that the first customer in for, say, $7,000 would have quarterly reports on $57,000 worth of research, and the next one would get $64,000, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were getting a good deal for their money. This program took off and eventually got up to 20 sponsors, including several in Europe and at least one in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
The objective of this was to look over some fundamental aspects of oxidation and answer some basic questions without trying to get any patents. The idea was that we would try to produce ideas on which these companies could get patents or start their own programs.
Mm-hmm.
And it sold. It lasted for a total of about 12 years. But after 8 or 10, the sponsor began to drop off. And when they got down to 5, the program was killed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we settled many of the problems that we set out to answer. One was, what are the kinetics of these oxidations? What is the real difference between liquid phase and vapor phase oxidation? And the answer is not much but concentration.
Mm-hmm.
What is the mechanism of decompositions of peroxides? And primary, secondary, and tertiary. Some work on the effects of metals on oxidations.
Mm-hmm.
I had some of the work was done by full-time PhD employees of SRI. Much of the rest was done by postdocs.
Mm-hmm.
I decided pretty much what was done on the program, and I raised the money, and I checked the reports, but I gave the PhDs a good deal of latitude in what they did,
mm-hmm.
and I decided that they would to keep them happy, they'd have to be first named on the publications.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the publications where they were mostly responsible for the work, that's where it was done, that's the way it was done.
I see. Mm-hmm.
I think there may have been 20 publications, more or less, that came out of this work, and I think all of them were original and some of them were quite important. My interests then turned toward the oxidation of polymers, especially polyolefins. I had two very able postdocs on that, Dr. Mickey from Japan and Dr. Gepere from Strasbourg.
What was his name again?
Gepere. That's the French for Decker in English. D-E-C-K-E-R.
Uh-huh. Okay.
In Strasbourg. And together with the help of a BS here, we got out a series of 5 papers on the oxidation of polypropylene, polyethylene,
just a minute.
Dealt with polypropylene, polyethylene, their Cook polymers, and monomers. The work was done with both peroxide initiators of oxidation and gamma initiation of oxidation, and they were done mostly in the temperature range 20 to 45 degrees, where all the products were stable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for the first time, and I think that perhaps better than anybody else has done to date, we got a material balance,
mm-hmm.
on the oxygen of better than 90%, and in terms of products, and we could get a balance for the fates of the radicals generated. Now, this is the basis for interpreting all the work of others at higher temperatures and in the light where the products are not stable, and where, in most cases, they do not know the rates of initiation. Well, having put that plug in for this, giving my collaborators full credit, I'll go on to the next thing. I should say that Decker had done a similar job, somewhat similar job, with polyethylene glycols and radiation at Strasbourg.
Mm-hmm.
So it turned out that he was just the guy to do the job here,
mm-hmm.
but I think we had a simpler system and got a cleaner result
mm-hmm.
than they ever did at Strasbourg. But getting him at that time was a big break that I didn't appreciate until later.
Mm-hmm. How do they characterize the products these are high molecular weight compounds that are being oxidized.
In terms of alcohol groups, carbonyl groups, peroxide content, and molecular weight change.
I see.
The peroxides are two kinds, dialkyl and hydro. They were titrated.
Mm-hmm.
And the other things were determined mostly by IR. But they balanced out pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Before you go on to some of your other work, at any time during this period when you moved to U.S. Rubber and then to GE and then SRI, were you ever inclined to go back into academia?
Yes. 6 months to a year after I got to GE, I got more than one phone call asking me if I'd take a job at Indiana University.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I just couldn't decently leave GE after such a short period till I found out what it was all about.
Mm-hmm.
I think they may have come back to me later again. I'm pretty sure I could have had the job if I'd wanted it. I'm not sure that I would have been better off. I don't think I'm a particularly good administrator, a politician, or fur smoother. And I don't know how I would have done. I think they were considering me for chairman of the department.
Mm-hmm.
I have often wondered what would have happened if I had gone there, but I've never had any serious regrets. I don't mind some teaching. I would hate to be swamped in it. But I can get along on diet of research alone. While I was at U.S. Rubber, I had several inquiries. I think one was Colorado. One was another school. I think it was at GE that I had an inquiry from University of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. There may have been another one or two,
mm-hmm.
but none of them came at just the right time.
Mm-hmm.
I think when the offer came from Pennsylvania, I told them that, well, I'm relatively happy here and I'm getting $15,000 a year. if you think you can compete with that, I'll be glad to listen to you. That's turned them right off. That was quite good money at that time.
Well, those are the things you have to you have to bargain about, and they can't.
I think Colorado was quite interested, and I think it was Stan Crystal that was behind that. And this was attractive, but I think things were going too well where I was. I think it was. It was GE. I know. I think it was U.S. Rubber at the time.
You had talked to me about the oxidation of polymers, and then after you left that, or
well,
the next.
I decided that what the most useful thing I could do in the polymer oxidation field was to try to devise a reliable accelerated aging test for stabilized polyolefins. When a stabilized polyolefin is exposed to the weather or heated at above 100 degrees, there is a long period where, by conventional methods, nothing happens. This is the period during which the stabilizers are being depleted and maybe some peroxides are being formed. But finally, at least if you have a single stabilizer in the polymer, there is an abrupt change. The rate, instead of going along very slowly, turns up quite rapidly and then becomes very high because the peroxides accumulate. The reaction is autocatalytic, and soon after the reaction starts to go fast, the polymer fails. That is, it becomes brittle. And at this point, only about 1 mole% of oxygen has been absorbed, and 90 to 99% of the elapsed time has been induction period, when you couldn't see anything by conventional methods. What we have done is to develop some methods for measuring extents of reaction during the induction period. These have to be extremely sensitive. We are concerned with hundredths or a thousandths of a mole percent of reaction. But we have found some measures, some things that will do this after a good deal of trial and error. And this is where we are now. But now it turns up that most of the commercial, well, the plan was that from the steady or very slowly increasing rate during the induction period, we could predict the time to failure. And the early experiments indicated that we could. However, a few months ago, the roof fell in. We found that with mixtures of stabilizers, we don't get anything that we can extrapolate from. In other words, one stabilizer goes and the rate changes, and then it may increase gradually over quite a period. So we have no decent basis for prediction at this time. However, there are a good many ways in which we can get out of this. One is to follow the depletion of the stabilizers, and this can be done by HPLC or by UV. Another is to measure oxygen consumption during this period. Well, that's one of our ways of following the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
By using a cell that isn't much larger than the film, we can get fairly large changes in oxygen consumption during the induction period, that is, by changes in pressure or oxygen-nitrogen mixture.
Mm-hmm.
The mixture we have determined by gas chromatography. In other words, we can see slight changes in a synthetic air mixture when the amount of air mixture is very small compared with the film. And it may be that when X percent of oxygen has been absorbed, say 3/10 or 6/10 for one failure, if we can make a prediction to that point, we can do pretty well at what is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, with stabilizers